I don't know whether you've been following the rugger. It was a good day for England last night. I didn't realise there's a thing called fantasy rugby teams. And you choose your 20 top players out of the six countries. And there's a website run by Land Rover. And you can fill in your team and see how you compete with the other. There are 15,000 people, so it's 15,000 minus one. And you can see how you do. And the winner, at the end of the whole competition, gets a day on a Land Rover. Seems to me a pretty cheap prize. But anyway, that's a fantasy game of rugby, and I'm sure you've, some of the boys may have got fantasy football teams. Well, a number of years ago, I read in the Sunday papers, must have been probably round about the end of a year, of a fantasy dinner party. Who would you like to invite from all time in history to a special dinner? Winston Churchill was pretty high up on people's lists. Elizabeth I, Plato, Wilberforce. If you were to have your favourite dinner party and you were to ask them, what are the key questions we need to discuss, the key issues in life today? Well, if you had a group of politicians today, I suspect they would talk about global warming and the economy and the breakdown of the family. If you had a group of scientists, maybe they'd be talking about AIDS, cancer, the famine, and possibly the need for GM crops. But they'd all have missed the key issue. The key question in life is, does God exist? That is the big question for everybody. And books have been written about it. Piles and piles of books. Some of them helpful, some of them not helpful. But actually, this psalm tells us in 6 verses very clearly that God does exist. And then what would be the other questions you would ask? Well, if God exists, there are 2 supplementary questions. You'd want to follow on pretty quickly. How can I get to know him? And what's my response having got to know him? And those 3 questions, I would submit, are the 3 biggest questions that face our country, have faced all generations in England, and have faced all generations in every country in the world. Does God exist? How can I get to know him? And what should my response be? Well, Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God. You've only got to look at creation to know that there's a God. This says it in poetry, day after day, night after night. There's no speech or language where their voice isn't heard. It doesn't matter where you look. You can be in a desert island off Australia or in the South Pacific. You may not have a Bible, but you've only got to look up at heaven and see there had to be a creator. It couldn't have happened by chance. And just in case we haven't got it, the psalmist goes on in verse 4, their voice goes out to the ends of the world. You're in the North Pole or the South Pole. It doesn't matter. Look, and you will see a heaven. There'll be a sun. It rises from one end of the world to the other. And in verse 6, nothing is hidden from its heat. And so, the psalmist is saying, it's very simple. There is a God, and creation proves it. What about the reading Jeff read in Romans? If you want to flip on to page 793, Romans chapter 1, verse 18. Romans 1, verse 18, verse 19, sorry. Since what may be made known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. There's no mystery. God has shown us that he is the creator. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. So men are without excuse for knowing that he is the creator. Well, some scientists will say, well, it's all right for you Christians, but this isn't true. Well, I tried to get some information from the internet. One of my favorite verses in Genesis chapter 1 is when God has made the sun and the moon, and he says, and the writer goes on, he also made the stars. It's as if, you know, it's just an afterthought. A toss-away line, he made the stars. Well, I don't know whether you probably are far more intelligent than I am, you knew all this, but a team of French and Swiss astronomers have now detected a galaxy that is nearly 13.25 billion light years away. Now, I can't struggle with that. I mean, if I want to see something at the end of Chippenham, I don't know how long it would take, a second or two for the light to go from one end of Chippenham to the next. Quicker? Much quicker. Much quicker, our scientist says. Well, I think the sun is something like 10 minutes away from us. This is not a million years, not a billion years. It's nearly 13.25 billion years. And the total mass of stars in this young galaxy is 10 million. Well, that's peanuts, because it's about 10,000 times smaller than the Milky Way, which is our galaxy. And people say that this just happened by chance, the Big Bang Theory. Well, in CERN, which is the European Laboratory for Particle Physics, is near Geneva, they put out a press release, I think, in June 2000. What happened before the Big Bang? Try asking a cosmologist this, and they'll usually fob you off by saying it's a meaningless question. Stephen Hawking famously likened it to asking, what's north of the North Pole? The Big Bang, the idea goes, was the ultimate beginning. Time and space came into being then. There was no before. But that may not be true. One daring physicist has come up with an answer to the question no one is supposed to ask. If he's right, the universe began an imaginably long time before the Big Bang. Far from being the beginning of time, the Big Bang was merely an important turning point in the universe history. I don't think it's a coincidence, but I'm told that there's a higher percentage of Christians who are top scientists than in any other profession. I would like to think they've excluded clergymen from that statistics. But they're meant to be a high percentage of top scientists are Christians. And why? Because as they look at the evidence, they say there has to be somebody outside of us. We have to have been created. It's amazing what people believe and worship that is just created. In some countries, I'm sure, they will worship water. You know, it's just a glass of water. But they will say, well, we all need water, so there must be a god of water. Well, what do? You drink it to say thank you to him? Of course you don't. It's meaningless. It's just a glass of water. God made it. Do you throw it on the floor? Well, I'm not going to do that because Andy's got to tear it up. It's just, I mean, it's nothing. It's water. God made the water. He is the one we should be praising and thanking. You probably remember the story in Acts when Paul was walking in Athens. And he said, you worship an unknown God. I'm going to explain who he is. We can see from Psalm 19 that God is the God of creation. Could it be a coincidence? I don't know whether any of the older people used to get John Bull printing presses. Anybody remember John Bull printing presses? Michael does. Anybody else? Oh, hands up. I got one for Christmas, and you had these little rubber letters, and you would try and slip them into a bit of wood and print on a stamp. Well, I don't think that was the reason I joined the printing club at school, but I did join the printing club at school. We had endless bits of metal, each letter, and we had trays of it, and you'd take them out and hope it wasn't damaged, and you would spend hours getting it into the printing press, and you'd print Happy Christmas. I printed some cards with Happy Christmas on. I found one a few years ago in my desk. And I want you to imagine that outside there we've had churches, the road construction people, and they've brought a couple of large lorries full of typeface, and they've dumped it out there. And Andy comes in with a forklift truck. We managed to get a hole in here. He comes in with a forklift truck and dumps a pile of letters in the middle of the floor. Now, we want to make sure that the elders and Spencer aren't twisting the results. So we get the youngest children in the morning congregation, and they each pick... How many letters do we need to pick? We need to pick 433 letters. And each time a letter is given, we write it up on the board. We're allowed to put spaces, and we're allowed to put spaces between words, and we're allowed, at the end of a line, to put them on a line below. And I want you to believe that those 433 letters randomly selected are Shakespeare's 126th sonnet. O thou my lovely boy, who in thy part hast hold time's fickle glass, his fickle hour, etc., etc. And we carry on, and at the end of it, we've got all of his plays. All of Shakespeare's plays, all of his sonnets, just by random chance, picking up one letter at a time. Well, if you believe that, you must be nuts, because you wouldn't get it. You'd get gobbledygook if we picked out letters randomly. And yet that is what people believe if they say God did not create the world. The statistics in God not creating the world are so great we can't comprehend it. The heavens declare the glory of God. Look up at the sky. Look up at creation. It's obvious the world was created by God. So what must we do? Thank him for the beauty of creation. We see a tree, the grass, the sky, the stars, whatever it is, thank God that he created it. But merely looking at creation isn't enough. It tells us God is powerful, but it doesn't help us understand who he is and what he wants from us. And the great thing is, he's given us this book, the Bible. An Australian, Phil Jensen, said, the Bible tells us all we need to know about all we need to know. If the Bible says a lot about something, it's because we need to know a lot about it. If the Bible says a little bit about something, it's because we only need to know a little bit about it. So the Bible has, as we're going to see in a minute, it tells us a lot about how we should live our lives, our relationships, how we behave at work. But the Bible doesn't care whether I wear a blue shirt or a white shirt, brown shoes or black shoes. The Bible doesn't care. It only tells us the things we need to know. So, if you look at verse 7, the law of the Lord is perfect. It revives the soul. Are we feeling weary? I don't know whether you can remember those very hot summer days we had. Must have had one last year. And you've been working in the garden and you're desperate for a cold drink. You go in and say, that was good. I've had a cold squash. That's the sort of meaning of this word. The law of the Lord revives us. His statutes are trustworthy. I don't know whether you ever watch any of these films of people rock climbing. Well, occasionally they... It's not the crampon, it's that pin or something they nail in or screw in to the rock face, and there's somebody holding them above. No, he's normally holding them below. And he's got a line, and the guy's going up and nailing in these crampons. And occasionally, the rock cracks, the pin comes out, and the guy falls all the way down. And hopefully he's caught by his friend, but occasionally in these films, his friend's pins also come out and they all end up at the bottom. They thought their pins were trustworthy, but they weren't. But the Bible is totally trustworthy. It makes wise the simple. One of our children hasn't even taken GCSE. If he understands the Bible and is following it, he's wiser than a cabinet minister who ignores it. Did you know that? You're wiser than a cabinet minister who doesn't understand the Bible. Because this Bible will make us wise. Verse 8. The precepts of the Lord are right. He'll give joy to our heart. Often if we're feeling slightly down, we say, well, I'll eat something or I'll watch TV. But actually, 5 minutes with the Bible, I don't do this, but 5 minutes with the Bible probably would be better for us. It would give joy to our hearts. The commands of the Lord are radiant. They're like a torch. I had to walk last winter from my mobile home, which was my office, back to the house. And it was very dark and I hadn't got a torch. And I bumped into a building. I needed a light. Well, the Bible is a light showing us how we should walk. The fear of the Lord is pure. The fear of the Lord. Now this, if you turn to page 475, keep a paw in Psalm 19, but turn to page 475, the last couple of verses of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, in case you've forgotten, is a book where the writer is trying to find the meaning of life. He searches for the meaning of life, and he goes round in circles looking for the meaning of life. And in chapter 12, verse 13, he said, all's been heard, I've finished. I've looked at it from every which way. This is my conclusion. Now, if you get a government report, and the conclusion is normally about sort of, I don't know, 10 pages or something, he concludes it in a verse and a half. Very simple. And I want to focus on the half verse. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. I heard Derek Kidner speak on this, and we need to cross out the word duty. If you want to be the whole of man, fear God and keep his commandments. And that's what we see in Psalm 19. We need to fear God. Now, the psalmist wants us to understand this, and he's talking in a poem. So he says, what's the most valuable thing I can think of? Gold. Well, the Bible's more valuable than gold. What's the sweetest thing I can think of? Honey. It's better than honey. Do you get the picture? The Bible is the best book. It's our handbook. By keeping them, your servant is warned. There's great reward. This is our handbook. Handbooks are important. I know you youngsters, if we're given a TV remote, you don't even need to look at the handbook. You just get it going. I've got this forklift truck, but it's got so many levers, I can't drive it. I don't know which lever to go forward. I put one lever, the forklift goes up. Another lever, it goes out. Another lever, it points down. But I don't know the lever, without a handbook, which way to go forward, which way to go backwards. This Bible is our handbook. And if we read it, our lives will be changed. I was trying to challenge myself and say, am I willing to read 10 minutes a day more every day? For those of us who read the Bible daily, the challenge is, are we willing to read another 5 or 10 minutes more? For those of us who don't read it, my challenge is try for 3 months. You say, why for 3 months? That'll come up in the next point at the end. Try it for 3 months and see if it actually makes any sense. I remember camping off the west coast of Scotland in 1971, as a very young Christian, and I was reading some Bible notes, and I was reading the Bible, And for the first time, it didn't seem like a history book. It didn't seem like a telephone directory. It seemed real. And I remember the joy of reading whatever it was and saying, yep, this book is relevant to me today. Okay. Third point. We've seen that God is alive. We just need to look at the heavens. If we want to find out about God, read his word. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Some people say, how do we know this book is true? I have to say I've never had difficulty with that question. If God could create the world, what's a simple book like this to him? I mean, stars millions of miles away, millions of stars. Of course he can give us a handbook. If you want more evidence, Jesus believed in it. And if he did, that's good enough for us. Okay. Thirdly, having seen God exists, having seen that the way to find out more about him is to read his word, what should my response be? Verse 12. Who can discern his errors? Often we don't find our faults. Often we're not conscious of our failings. But the Holy Spirit will gradually show us our failings. As a Christian, we should ask God to forgive us our sins. Unfortunately, we sin daily. We say things we shouldn't, we do things we shouldn't, we don't do things we should. Whatever it is, all of us daily sin. So we should be daily asking God to forgive us. Not only the sins we're aware of, but we probably have hidden faults we're not aware of. Things that we're doing that we're not even aware we're upsetting people. We should ask God to forgive us and to show us where we're going wrong. Also, we should pray that our lives will be changed. As in verse 13, keep your servant from willful sins. Change me. I know I'm sinning, so I'm not asking you to forgive me. I'm asking you to change my heart and my attitude and my will, that they won't rule over me. I said to the men's meeting a couple of months ago, it seems to me that there are two. Let me put it this way. Some prayers God won't answer. Shock horror. France didn't win the rugby yesterday. You can't have two teams winning the same match. You can have a draw, but it is, unless I've misunderstood it, it is technically impossible for two teams to win the same match. No doubt this country will legislate that everybody's a winner, but in reality, you can only have one winner. Now, God won't answer some prayers. If we all ask for something stupid, he won't give it to us. But there are two prayers that he's guaranteed to answer. The first is, I'm sorry for my sins and I want to become a Christian. He's guaranteed to answer that. Many of you will remember the verse in Revelation. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in. And in that famous picture, the handle is on inside. It's in us. God is knocking. It's up to us to open in. That's a prayer that he wants to answer. The second prayer he's desperate to answer, and that is called justification. Those who like J's, it's Jesus, justified, just as if I'd never sinned. And you either get 0% or 100% on that test. You're either a Christian or you're not. Sanctification is becoming Christ-like. Asking God to change our minds and hearts and wills so that our willful sins won't rule over us. And I guess technically we could be 1 out of 100 or up to 99 out of 100. And it's a lifelong change. And I gave the example that if I was to sail a boat from Dover to Calais and my compass was 1 degree out, I would end up just not quite at the harbour, but hopefully within sight of the harbour, and I could change direction and sail into the harbour. But if I was sailing around the whole world and my compass was 1 degree out and I needed to find a small island to get some water, I would miss it. So I would need to get a sextant out and continually look at the stars that God made and say, I need to change my course slightly. And that's what we as Christians need to do to be sanctified. Then will I be blameless, innocent of great transgression. Now verse 14, I think, and I may be wrong on this, is taken out of context. I've often heard preachers use it about what he is about to speak from the pulpit. I think that's taken out of context. I think it's to do with becoming sanctified. If we are sanctified, then will the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. It's to do with each of us daily becoming more Christ-like. Now, I was going to look at Matthew very briefly. Matthew 7, which sort of emphasizes what we've been looking at here. Spencer was preaching on this about a year ago, and again it was another passage regularly taken out of context. Matthew 7:7, ask and it will be given you, seek and you'll find, knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks the door will be opened. Well, the context of that is in a very long sermon, starting in chapter 5 and finishing at the end of chapter 7. And Jesus is continually saying, you've heard it said, but I tell you. And they said, he said it once, twice, three times, four times. How on earth can we possibly live up to the standards God is setting down for us? And Jesus in a way said, well, it's not that difficult. If you ask, I will make you holy. If you ask, I will change your lives for you. And that, I think, links in with Psalm 19 at the end. We're asking God to change us, to save us from willful sins, to renew our minds. So in conclusion, for the Christians, we need to ask God to forgive us our sins, and we need to try and become more Christ-like and ask him to change us. For those who aren't Christians, the answer is to come to him. Does God exist? Yes. How do I get to know him through his word? What is my response to ask him to forgive me and to change me? Now, Sandy and I had the great privilege of going to an amazingly happy funeral. Funerals are normally very depressing. This was an incredible funeral. It was an elderly gentleman who'd been in a Bible study Sandy and I ran at our house before we came here. And he'd been a headmaster of a school. And it was standing room only, huge Victorian church. And there were so many people, they had two policemen directing traffic. And at the end, the leader of the service said, I'm going to read out a message from Crispin. And Crispin was lying in the coffin. And we were given a copy as we went out. And I'd like to conclude by reading this. I should like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming to this service. Your presence is a great encouragement to Christine and my sister and other members of the family. Many of you present are already committed believers in Jesus Christ with a firm personal relationship with him. Christianity is nothing if not personal. I rejoice for you. Others may not have had the opportunity of taking Jesus into your lives in this personal way. Indeed, many may have been put off by too much, too soon at Aldrow, for which I feel very responsible, or elsewhere. Others may have found the whole idea incredible and unrealistic. Still others may have rejected the Christian faith altogether. I urge any of you who do not know where they're going, who do not share my belief in a wonderful future with Jesus, to take this opportunity of receiving him. There is no question of merit. He's done everything necessary on the cross for our forgiveness. No one need feel not good enough to come. I simply ask you to receive him today before it is too late. No one knows, particularly in these uncertain days, what tomorrow holds. Do you know where you're going on your journey? Do you know where life is taking you, my friend? Do you know the only guide? Are you travelling at his side? Are you safe, or is there danger at the end? Do you know the only road from earth to heaven? Do you want the guide who will take you all the way? Listen, Jesus is his name. It's for you to earth he came. He's near you. Put your hand in his today. Well, that's what I did in 1971, round about February or March. I can't quite remember. I thought, is there a heaven? Because if there is, it's going to be the best party there ever was. I confess that I went to all the parties at university, and I thought, well, if there's a heaven, party's going to be better than any other party I've ever been to. Well, one evening I went to the Students' Union, and where there was the discotheque, there was music coming out. Well, there shouldn't have been music, because it wasn't a discotheque night. So I said, what's going on? So I walked in and saw a friend of mine, Steve. I said, what's going on? He said, well, the Christian Union are putting on a talk. Why don't you stay? It was a bit difficult to walk out. So I said, well, okay, I'll stay. So I stayed, and David Watson was speaking, and I listened to what he said, and I spoke to one of his team afterwards and said, well, can you prove to me God exists? This chap actually didn't actually answer any of my questions. He just said, well, look, I've got to go to another meeting for those who are doing the post-grads. Walk over with me. So I walked over with him, and nothing he said made sense. And I waited and waited for him to come back and talk to me, and he didn't. And after about 20 minutes, half an hour, I said, well, I better go back to my room. So I went back to my room, and I'd remembered just a few things from the talk. One, if you want to become a Christian, you've got to confess and say sorry to God. Secondly, tell a Christian that you've become one. And thirdly, why don't you do everything a Christian does for 3 months? At the end of 3 months, see if it's true. You've got nothing to lose. Well, I wanted to guarantee my place at the biggest party of all time, so I went back to my bed and prayed. And I told somebody the next day. Well, that was... I didn't realise it was going to be quite so changing. I normally got up about 10:30 at night, I mean the morning, and three mornings a week, they had a prayer meeting at 8:30. So I had to get up at 8:30 in the morning and be there three mornings a week, because I said I was going to do whatever a Christian did. And then they had CUs on a Saturday. Well, Saturday was party night. So I had to go to the CU first and then to the party. And I did it for 3 months. And I haven't looked back. So, the Bible is going to tell us all we need to know about how we can get to know God and how we can be forgiven.